This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. More than 5 years in the planning, approval process, and construction, a gas pipeline that's supposed to bring natural gas service to as many as 4,000 customers in Addison County is currently being built. In that time, the cost of the project has doubled, and people opposed to the construction have continued to try to get the whole project stopped. Their concerns are varied. One is an opposition on principle to natural gas. It's a fossil fuel that Governor Shumlin has taken to calling a bridge fuel between home heating oil and a more environmentally friendly renewable energy source in the future. Opponents also question the impact construction can have on sensitive natural areas where the pipe is being laid. There's also the company's use of eminent domain and how this project was approved at the regulatory level. Over the years, VPR has covered this story in a number of ways, and you'll find all of our reporting at vpr.net. Today on the program, we're going to hone our focus and look at some of the financial issues related to this project, including why the costs are so much higher than initially anticipated. We will be joined in a bit by Vermont Gas Systems CEO Don Rendell, and at the end of the program, we'll get into some of the other issues I just mentioned, like the company's plan to build through a wetland area in Hinesburg. But first, today, we're joined by a vocal critic of the project's costs and its impact on ratepayers. Greg Marshaldon is AARP Vermont's state director. Greg, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So just very quickly and sort of in a little synopsis, why does AARP have an issue with this pipeline?
Well, look, there's several reasons here, and one of the big reasons is that AARP represents a whole lot of ratepayers in Franklin and Chittenden County, many of whom live on fixed income, Social Security, and perhaps not much else. So utility rates need to be fair, and they need to be reasonable. And for folks like our retirees, any kind of increases or spikes in rates can make a really big deal in their ability to sort of figure out whether they're going to pay their rent for the prescription drugs they need. So that's one reason. The second reason is that we feel that there's just been an absence of strong regulatory oversight, not just over the VGS process, but really for quite a long time now. So we think we have sort of a perfect storm going on here. We have the absence of a strong regulatory process. The Department of Public Service has clearly demonstrated that they are not up to the task of representing Vermonters really all across the state. And then we have this, what we view as a very poorly managed, long, sort of large-scale construction project whose costs have more than doubled over time.
So some of your complaints are really to the state and to the way the state manages and decides on regulation and on giving certificates of public good.
Yes, I would say that there's enough blame to go around here on both sides.
In terms of the AARP's position, is this really just about money and what it's going to cost ratepayers, not environmental concerns, not other issues with this pipeline?
Yeah, well, you mentioned in your intro, there's certainly a whole host of issues here, whether they be around eminent domain, private property, environmental issues. These are all very important issues. They're just not AARP issues. We're a consumer advocacy organization, and our focus over time has been really laser-like on the issues associated with the cost, but more importantly, who is paying for it, how much are they paying for it, and is that prudent and fair? And in this case, we just believe that this is landing in the laps of tens of thousands of ratepayers in Franklin and Chittenden County who are subsidizing a pipeline that will head to Middlebury that will only reach about 3,000 residential households. Of those 3,000 residential households, these people now all have to decide whether they're going to pay to convert to natural gas, which remains to be seen. And the ratepayers in Chittenden and Franklin are going to be paying for this for 30 or 40 more years, which we think is just patently unfair.
We're talking about the funding, project costs, and financial concerns in the construction of the natural gas pipeline that's being built through Addison County right now. In a couple of minutes, we'll be joined by Vermont Gas Systems CEO Don Rendell, but right now we're looking at why AARP Vermont is opposed to the way project costs are being recouped. We may have time to address environmental and property concerns later in the hour, but for now, listeners, if you have questions or comments about the financial aspects of this project, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. But Greg Marshaldon, one of the things that Vermont Gas Systems is planning to do is to ask for approval for a rate decrease. Seems like that would be a good thing for your constituents.
Well, I mean, first of all, the price of natural gas and oil has really decreased dramatically over the last few years. But It's important that your listeners know of something that we that is talked about as the SERF Fund, but that's a System Expansion Reliability Fund. And since 2011, VGS customers have been paying about $4 million a year into this fund. Now, when you get your gas bill, if you're a Chittenden or Franklin VGS ratepayer, there's nothing on your bill that says they have been taking money from you that they have not asked to take from you. So this money is being drawn in to the account. The ratepayers have no idea it's being taken from them. There's now more than $20 million in this fund. The board has approved to have this fund go on for another 20-plus years. So they are using this money to sort of smooth out the fact that this, that they can say they're going to provide a rate decrease when, in fact, they are taking additional ratepayer money and using that to what I think they call smooth rates, which is just a fancy way of saying taking extra money from you to pay down the large and exorbitant costs associated with this project that have gone from $67 million to, more than double that. So
there's the money in the SERF was already taken from ratepayers, and that
and
was
it continues to be taken
board and legally approved.
That gets us to sort of the second point here. It's just that if we really had an independent ratepayer advocacy operation or office in the state of Vermont, we believe this would not be happening. The Department of Public Service is an interesting sort of amalgam of things. It includes the energy policy of the governor's office, and the commissioner of the department is a direct appointee, a political appointee of the governor. Chris Recchio was appointed by Governor Shumlin. In the past, it was Liz Miller. This goes back to Governor Douglas with Dave O'Brien. So we're not pointing fingers directly at Chris Recchio here, although we certainly disagree with a lot of things that he has done along the way. But we believe that this is a systematic problem. So the governor's energy policy, he wants this pipeline built. He has been very clear about that. So his energy policy now feeds in to how the department operates. So there's no independence.
Because the DPS commissioner is an appointee of the governor.
That's correct. And we are the only state in the country that does its ratepayer advocacy this way. Vermont has a lot of proud things where it talks about we're first in the nation this and we've done this. And those things I think Vermonters are very proud of. This is not one of those things that we should be proud of. We need an independent ratepayer advocacy operation whose primary responsibility is to look after the needs of whether ratepayers are having it stuck to them or not. And time again, not just with the VGS case, Jane, but going back to the issues associated with Green Mountain Power, the merger, and other cases over time, the state's two largest utilities continue to come out on top, and Vermonters get stuck with the bill. That's the fact.
So that's one of the things that AARP is really fighting for here, is an independent entity within the state, not appointed by the governor, who would be charged basically with acting on ratepayers' behalf. That's one of the things that you really would like to see in state government.
Yeah, I mean, look at this. You can't have an individual go in front of the Public Service Board. This is a complicated Byzantine process, which is the reason why GMP and VGS can hire as many lawyers as they want, as many economists as they want, as many lobbyists in the state house as they want. But Mr. Smith, living in Thetford, simply can't do that. And even if Mr. Smith could, what would he do going in front of the Public Service Board without deep knowledge in utility regulatory issues? We hire an attorney here in Vermont. We've hired economic experts from out of the state, some of the very best minds in the country, to help us look at this. We have been doing that over time because we feel that the Department of Public Service has not getting the job done. And again, that's under Governor Shumlin. It was certainly under Governor Douglas as well. This is something that is not new to our state. It has happened over time. But with 140-some-odd thousand members in this state, many of whom, again, are living on fixed incomes, we have stepped forward and spent, frankly, hundreds of thousands of dollars over time doing the work that we think the department ought to be doing. So there's a lot of different ways to do this. You can put an independent operation in the Attorney General's office. A number of other states do it this way. But you cannot, in fairness to ratepayers and to Vermonters, have the governor's energy policy drive how ratepayer advocacy gets done. And that's what's happening, certainly with the VGS case.
I'm talking with Greg Marshallden. He's AARP Vermont State Director, and he's explaining why his organization is pushing for an independent ratepayer advocate for the state. In terms of the perhaps shorter term decisions about what happens with Vermont gas systems and how much the company is allowed to charge ratepayers and how it moves around the money in its funds, You know, as you mentioned, you're opposed to VGS being able to use SERF, the Service Expansion and Reliability Fund, to basically fund a ratepayer decrease, because you say that's already ratepayer money and it's not the way it's supposed to be used. The company says that without approval to use that fund, rates for current customers would jump by 13%, at least temporarily. So how would you like to see Vermont Gas Systems move forward on this particular score right now?
Well, we'd like to see them return the money to the ratepayers. It's over $20 million in there that are ratepayer money that should go directly back to the ratepayer in the form of a bill credit or in the form of cash. We saw this in the GMP-CVPS merger case too, Jane. Ratepayers bailed GMP and CVPS out when they made terrible deals with Hydro-Québec. Okay, not deals that ratepayers made, but deals that they made. Then they came to the board and said, we're about to go bankrupt. We need to raise rates. ARP at that time fought for if those companies were ever rich enough to be sold or merged, that ratepayers would get that money back. That didn't even happen. So we're at a place right now where the strength of the utilities and their lobbyists and their lawyers and all the heat they put behind us are leaving ratepayers behind and making them pay for everything. So let's start by returning the $20+ million in the SERF to ratepayers where it belongs. And let's ask whether the CEO and his team will be more transparent about how they're taking that money and explaining it to their customers. Because you can look at your bill and you would have no way of knowing that they're taking extra money on top of your rates for their own convenience.
How would you like them to pay for this project, though?
Well, I think that's a question for VGS, frankly. We already know that we're on the hook for $130-some-odd million, no matter what.
That's right. Public Service Board has allowed VGS to basically put ratepayers on the hook for $134 million of the cost of the project. The cost of the actual project is significantly higher than that, but that's what VGS is allowed to transfer
to ratepayers. And let's remember in the MOU that the Department and Commissioner Recchia negotiated with your next guest, there are loopholes in there that you could drive a Mack truck through, okay?
MOU being Memorandum of Understanding between Vermont Gas Systems.
Exactly. So, it could be $135 million for ratepayers. It could be $145, it could be $165, it could be over $200. We have no idea.
That the costs of the project are higher than anticipated, but out of the control of Vermont Gas Systems,
just to be clear to people. Absolutely. That is absolutely correct. I mean, I think if anybody is making money around here, it's, the VGS parent company in Montreal, Gas Metro, and VGS shareholders. The shareholders are doing very, very well, but Vermonters are really taking it in the shorts on this project.
So would you like this project to be stopped altogether, halted now, and not completed?
That's not necessarily a question for ARP. We don't oppose the pipeline. We don't have a position on what type of fuel is being used. That's just not our organization's role in this conversation. But we would certainly want to know that if the project was stopped, how much it would cost to deal with it and how much they would stick ratepayers for it. And we have no idea what those costs would be.
All right. Well, maybe we can get some answers to that coming up. We're going to be talking with the CEO of Vermont Gas Systems, Don Rendell. Greg Marshaldon is the state director of AARP Vermont. He's been explaining his organization's opposition to Vermont Gas's plan to pay for the natural gas pipeline it's building through Addison County. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Jane.
As I said, up ahead, CEO of Vermont Gas Systems explains the company's side and answers your questions and concerns. We are specifically looking at issues related to cost, financing, and funding today. You can call with your questions 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We've been talking with Greg Marshaldon, who represents AARP members in Vermont. On behalf of those members, AARP Vermont has been opposing certain proposals submitted by Vermont Gas Systems to help cover the costs of a big natural gas pipeline project it's building through Addison County. Specifically, AARP is fighting the company's desire to use a pool of money known as SERF to cover what would otherwise be a rate hike for existing customers because of the pipeline's cost. SERF stands for Service Expansion and Reliability Fund, and AARP argues that spending that money in this way is a violation of policy. That's one of several fairly complex issues involved in the financial side of this pipeline project. There are other arguments opponents also have, from safety concerns about explosions to the environmental impact, not only on the landscape here, but of the fuel source itself. to issues with eminent domain being used to push through the project on opposing landowners' properties. We are focusing on the finances today to drill down and get some clarity on that one aspect of this case. And if you have questions or thoughts about that, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. For the rest of the hour, to answer your questions about the company's negotiations and decisions is Vermont Gas Systems CEO and President Don Rendell. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here.
You heard Greg Marshallden talking about why AARP Vermont believes that Vermont Gas Systems should not be able to tap into this fund, known as SERF, to basically fund a ratepayer decrease when that's ratepayer money that you're using to fund the decrease. So it's essentially sort of giving back the money, but not quite saying it that way. Why is this a fund that you think is appropriate to tap for this reason?
Great question. You know, if you put this in context, Vermont Gas is a company that has served Franklin and Chittenden County for 50 years, began in the mid-60s, serving just a few thousand customers in downtown Burlington, and has expanded over the last 50 years to all of the communities in Franklin and Chittenden counties in the past, just in the past couple of years, expanding to Richmond, to Hinesburg, to Jericho, to Underhill, to Enosburg. And all of those expansions were as a consequence of, as with the opportunity to invest in infrastructure, to bring choice and opportunity to new communities, to bring to new customers, to new families and businesses, the opportunity to have a choice about their energy needs and to have the opportunity to choose natural gas. And that is how we have built all of our infrastructure in Vermont, whether it's natural gas service, whether it's telephone service, broadband service, roads and bridges. I mean, that's an essential part of how we invest as a community and as a state. I'm pleased to talk about the fund and about how that fund is doing great things for our ability to bring infrastructure, to bring choice and opportunity to new families and businesses.
Okay, but Greg Marshallden says what you did was take that money from ratepayers who are never going to see a benefit from this project, because the pipeline will basically put new customers online. And now you're telling them, look, we're going to decrease your rates with your own money that we already took from you.
It is important for us to think about this, and just in the context that I described, which is we all participate in the expansion of our important infrastructure by helping to grow that infrastructure for other communities. And that's really what the expansion fund is all about. You know, it was several years ago our Public Service Board approved this as a creative approach to advance our state energy plan and to bring natural gas service to more families and businesses. That's exactly what we're doing. It's very similar to a reserve fund approach, similar to the reserve funds that many towns use to make their big investments.
Although those reserve funds are supposed to then benefit the existing townspeople. If you need to buy a new truck for road repair, that's for the people who are already driving those roads, not a new road that's going to be built for new customers who then don't have to pay those costs.
Oh, I think if you think about it in the context of roads, no, it's actually very analogous, very similar. And in fact, we will all benefit as we bring this infrastructure to new communities. You know, this is how we improve our overall carbon footprint. This is how we help our sister communities, our new communities, to become economically stronger. This is how we look out for the working families, the low income families, the seniors in other communities. And I must say that the AARP approach is one that honestly I don't really understand, because yes, we are reducing rates for customers, and we're doing it in a way that benefits everyone, that benefits all communities. It's very different than pitting one group against the other. Those who have the benefit of safe, reliable, affordable natural gas service saying, we're going to close the door behind us, and that we've got ours, That's it. We're done.
Another approach, though, is what Charles wrote to us, saying if the shareholders were paying for this pipeline instead of the ratepayers, would this project still be going through? And if this is a project that will ultimately be profitable, why not take it out of company profits now, take the costs out and recoup those costs over time when this project is profitable to put back into the coffers of the shareholders and the people who run the company?
Well, we have a compact in this state with our as a utility, and the shareholder, the company, does pay for this project. That's what we're doing. We're doing it right now. And then we price our services to customers. We price them on an affordable and competitive basis. We price them with the oversight of regulation so that we encourage investment, so that customers pay for safe, reliable, affordable service. They pay reasonable prices for those services, and they get good customer service, and that is exactly what we're doing here.
One of the questions about the SERF, again, the Service Expansion and Reliability Fund, and your ability to use it for this project is how that money is actually allowed to be used. And so, one of the questions has been: is Vermont Gas Systems formally waiting until October to make this request to use this money in anticipation of the project being fully built, because it's only allowed to be used for projects that are already in existence and already basically used and useful? And so you have a very tight timeline here for finishing construction to be able to formally ask to use that money to pay for it, because it already has to be in use, if that makes sense.
Yes, we anticipate that we have not been using the System Expansion Fund, and it is there for us to take advantage of as we build this infrastructure, and it will be available when the infrastructure is completed. So all to be all to come in the future as we wrap up this project. You know, we're making great progress in the construction. I'm sure if you've driven up and down Route 2A and Route 7, you've seen that we're doing good work in getting the project done, and we're looking forward to having the project in service and to working through the process of settling our rates with our regulators and to putting that rate decrease in place.
But you can't ask for it until it's actually complete.
We have asked for it in contemplation of the completion of the project, and we look forward to those matching up.
Our number, if you have a question for Don Rendell, CEO of Vermont Gas Systems, about the costs, about the funding, about how the costs are being passed along for the natural gas pipeline being built in Addison County, is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're getting many. Mark Reese says, the fact is that natural gas is cleaner than oil, coal, and propane. Pipelines have a far better safety record than oil barges, trucks, and rail. Solar is only feasible because higher costs that we as ratepayers pay to provide the credits at a retail rate, not a wholesale rate. Frankly, I find the visible solar farms and windmills more of a visual blight than billboards or an underground pipeline. But Alice says, I hate seeing the construction with circus flags all over as I drive down our once beautiful highways and byways. I'm tired of repeating obvious truth and facts as if the powers that be had never heard them. It's now commonplace knowledge that natural gas and new fossil fuel infrastructure is unwelcome, oppressive, destructive, not cheap, explosive, poisonous, sickening, water polluting, and an infringement on property rights and human habits everywhere. Again, you can add your thoughts at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. And let's go to Lisa, who's calling in from Huntington. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. My question really was for Greg, but I guess Don could answer it. Every new connection to the new pipeline is going to cost $55,000 if there are 3,000 new connections, $41,000 if we go with the estimate of 4,000 new connections. This makes absolutely no sense. There must be some other reason known to the PSB and Vermont Gas, and I really would like a real answer, not PR, okay?
So, Lisa, thanks for your question. Lisa's basically taking the cost of the project, now estimated to be, I think, a little bit over $160 million, and breaking it down by how many connections to homes and businesses Vermont Gas Systems expects to make from the pipeline project, whether that's 3,000 or 4,000, and saying basically, look, the cost of that, those connections, if you add up the cost of the project, is like $40,000 or $50,000. So how do you respond to that, Don Rendell?
Lisa, thank you for your question. The project is a part of an infrastructure expansion, an important infrastructure expansion to bring the benefits that Chittenden and Franklin County have enjoyed for 50 years to new communities in Addison County, and we're really pleased to be able to do that. This is a direct answer, and I'm not going to PR you here. We've limited our ability to work with our customers at $134 million. That was the cap that we agreed to with the Public Service Department and was approved by the Public Service Board last year, and that cap will be the amount that we deal with as we move forward. And that pipeline, that expansion, will serve 4,000 customers. It will serve some very important employers in Addison County. You know, it's going to serve the Agrimark facility, which employs several hundred people. It's going to serve Porter Hospital, which employs several hundred people. It's going to serve Middlebury College. It's going to serve the economic infrastructure of Addison County, and we're confident give Addison County businesses, Addison County working families, a choice that will help build their community.
We got a note from Matt Cota of the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association on that, though. He says, keep in mind that oil heat has been less expensive on a BTU basis than natural gas for most of the past winter, according to the Vermont Public Service Department's fuel price report. And it's expected to remain so. Also keep in mind that for most homeowners, converting from oil heat to natural gas will cost more than $10,000, according to testimony before the PSB. Based on the testimony of Vermont Gas before the PSB back in 2015, the company hopes to gain 1,247 Addison County residential customers in 2016. Matt Cota says that's not going to happen. The same testimony by VGS claims that by 2049, Vermont Gas might be able to convince 2,296 homeowners to switch. This is not the 4,000 that they often claim in press releases, and it comes more than 30 years after the pipeline is built. Now, it goes without saying that the Fuel Dealers Association has a vested interest in this project as well, and on perhaps not the side that you're on, Don Rendell, but what about that assertion?
It's always good to hear from the competition. It is a process by which we bring new customers on. And we've been very successful in bringing customers on, even at faster rates than we use in our modeling as we go through the regulatory process. So we have almost 95% of those who have access to natural gas in the city of Burlington are our customers. They've chosen natural gas. They've chosen it for a variety of reasons. We look forward to giving the customers in Addison County that same choice, and we look forward to working with them to help them convert, to give them the opportunity to participate in our award-winning energy efficiency programs, to give low-income families in Addison County the same access to our low-income assistance program, which provides a substantial discount to our customers that our customers in Franklin and Chittenden County enjoy.
Nonetheless, I mean, one of the things that was appealing to people who were looking at natural gas was that it was a cheaper fuel source. And the way the economy has worked and the way things have been going in the last couple of years, fuel oil has been quite a bit cheaper. So how are you confident that you're going to be able to get people to switch over, given that it is a significant cost to change your home over to natural gas?
Sure. So fuel oil is, no doubt, much less expensive today than it was 2 years ago. What it will be in the future, who knows? And of course, it's completely unregulated. The price of oil has gone up and down almost 50% in the last 6 months in both directions. The price of fuel oil is up compared to the beginning of the year, that's one of the things that we hear from our customers drives them to make their choice about which way they want to go. And of course, we're not making customers do anything. It's our bringing a choice of safe, reliable, stably priced natural gas service, leaving aside the consistent price differential between propane and natural gas. You know, propane remains almost 40%, actually more than 40% more expensive than natural gas. And a substantial percentage of Vermonters who don't have access to natural gas heat their homes with propane.
Would VGS foot the bill for that, the cost of changing over a home to natural gas, the costs of actually getting the home retrofitted for that?
We have a variety of programs that provide customers with incentives to make those conversions, and we work with customers to assure that they make those conversions as economically as they can while we work with those customers to do what we all want to do, which is to use the most effective form of energy that's out there, and that is not using the energy at all. So that is having our energy efficiency folks working with our customers to reduce their overall energy usage whenever we can.
Let's go to Sarah, who's calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Sarah. Go right ahead.
Hi. I have a question. I have heard rumors recently that I am currently a Vermont Gas subscriber, that our rates are actually going to increase due to this project.
Are rates going to increase, Don Rendell?
Sarah, thank you for your question. We have asked the Public Service Board for a rate decrease starting effective in November of this year and going through 2017, and that's where we are. We do not expect to have a rate increase.
That confident. Makes it sound like you're confident that the Public Service Board will approve your request to use SERF to decrease rates.
Well, I am confident that that we have a very good, strong request to reduce rates for customers.
If the Public Service Board denies your request, though, will rates increase by 13%?
Well, I don't want to talk in hypotheticals, Jane.
But that's what you've put out there, right? That without approval for that, you would have to raise rates at least temporarily by 13%. I mean, that's not my hypothetical.
Well, as I said, we can be confident. I'm very confident that when our rate process is complete, that customers will not see a rate increase because we didn't ask for one, and we've asked for a rate decrease. We expect the Public Service Department to look at that rate decrease very carefully. It would be the first time in my 30 years that the department or the Public Service Board said no, you should really have a rate increase and turn it around the other way. I think we can all be confident that we'll have lower rates next year than we had this year.
Sarah's going to be mightily disappointed if at the end of the year she sees her bill and it's an increase when you've basically said, you've basically said the Public Service Board is going to go the way we want them to go.
No, let me be clear. The Public Service Board has a job to do. The Public Service Department has a job to do. And I expect that we're going to undergo a great deal of scrutiny here.
Because one of the concerns people have is that the PSB and the Public Service Department are rubber stamping these projects, and so you know when you say that the alarm bell's going off in my head, or it sounds like you think this is not a problem. We've got the PSB right where we want them. We're going to get this rate decrease approved.
I want to be very clear here. The regulatory process is a challenging one for us. It's certainly been challenging for us over the past 3 years. I expect it to be challenging going forward. We have asked for a rate decrease. I would expect that customers will be well taken care of. That's not because I know what the outcome is going to be, but because in my experience, it is usually the case that where we land is with more benefit to customers than the utility begins with, and we'll be going through that process in the coming months, and I'm confident that Sarah and others can have confidence that that process will yield a good outcome for customers.
We're talking with Don Rendell. He's CEO and President of Vermont Gas Systems, and we're looking at the costs and how they're being paid for and how they're being sort of figured out for this pipeline that is moving through Addison County under construction now. And if you have a question for him, our number is 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with Vermont Gas Systems CEO Don Rendell about the pipeline his company is constructing that connects existing natural gas lines in Chittenden County to new customers and pipe through much of Addison County, as far as Middlebury at this point. If you have a question for Don Rendell, you can call 1-800-639-2211. 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And let's go to Melanie, who's calling in from Moncton. Hi, Melanie. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Jane. Hi, Don. I have a question about how customers are actually supposed to make the choice that Mr. Rendell is talking about. When I go on BGS's website, I see a reference to gas rates being cheaper as of February 2015. Then when I go and use BGS's calculator, it says at the bottom that it is based on rates proposed as of August 6, 2016. When I do the calculator, I find that unless you're using more than 500 gallons of oil a year, you don't save any money converting to natural gas even before conversion. And also, because I'm very familiar with this case, I understand when Mr. Rendell says that prices are not going to increase this year. He only wanted to talk up to 2017, that he knows full well that over the next 30 years, the average customer is going to have to pay about $8,000 in additional charges above and beyond the value of what they're actually paying for in order to pay for this pipeline. And I think it's very important that Vermonters be able to make a solid choice based on solid information that is true, honest, and transparent. I don't know how the average person can make heads or tails of the information that's on Vermont Gas's website or heads or tails of the information that Mr. Rendell is giving. And I'd like to know what the company's going to do to rectify that.
Melanie, thanks for your call.
Thank you for your comment, Melanie. I'm interested to hear that our website is not working for you. I'll go back and talk to our team about how we're doing there. We do try to provide really good information to our customers and our prospective customers to help them make a decision. We've got a team that meets individually with customers to help them walk through the benefits of converting and the costs of converting, and it's worked out very well for our customers. You know, we have a customer satisfaction level that is very positive. It's in the 90% range, and it's because our team is taking good care of our customers. I will say that as you look forward, it is difficult to predict what customer rates are going to be over many years in the future. Just as it is impossible to predict what the cost of fuel oil or propane is going to be in the future. What we're committed to do, what I'm personally committed to do, is to ensure that we have competitive and affordable rates, not just this year, not next year after we have a rate decrease, but in the years ahead as we deal with all of the costs of operating an important energy company in Vermont. Judge us by our record. Our customers are paying 15% less today than they were in 2012, and that's a strong, steady record.
Although Ross in Middlebury says the binary that you're suggesting isn't the only possibility out there. He says the state's goal of 90% renewables by 2050 would make the building of new fossil fuel infrastructure seem ill-advised, to say the least. Proponents of the pipeline like to state that gas is cleaner than other fossil fuels, but several recent studies all indicate that the true greenhouse gas impact of natural gas has been greatly underestimated. It would seem, however, Ross says, that it's really hard to get the folks at VGS to understand this when their paycheck relies on them not understanding these basic facts.
Well, we've spent a lot of time thinking about these facts, and we're very focused on every way that we can to achieve our state energy goal of renewability, to achieve our overall imperative as humans, as communities, of reducing our carbon footprint. And yes, there are many ways that we will achieve that, and there are many opportunities we have. I'm so optimistic when I drive up and down Route 7 and I see the solar fields, and I see our pipeline going in, and I think about all of the ways that we will together achieve that clean energy future. We've got a lot of opportunity out there. It's not binary. Ross, I completely agree. It's a combination of a lot of creative ideas, a lot that we have already put into play, and many that we haven't thought of yet. And I look forward to working with you, with our customers, with our with all of our stakeholders to help achieve that clean energy future.
Will the VGS pipeline be obsolete, though, when we get to our 90% renewables goal?
I don't know, Jane, if it will or if it won't. My bet is that there will still be a place for natural gas, a service in our infrastructure and in our clean energy future. Gosh, there are so many things that could occur over the next 30 years, over the next 50 years. It's a really exciting time to be in this business, and that's part of what we're all aiming for. And you know, that's true of all of our infrastructure, whether it's those solar panels in the in our neighborhoods, or whether it's the solar farms in the Southwest, or whether it's wind energy all over the United States. Whatever it is, what one thing we know, it's going to change. One thing we know, we're aimed in the right direction, which is toward more renewability, toward reducing the impact of carbon, and we're doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for our communities, we're doing it for our kids, and we're doing it for future generations.
Let's go to Norm, who's calling in from Hinesburg. Hi, Norm. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I have a question for Mr. Rendell. The rate decrease he was talking about for next year, that's assuming the fund is used. Two questions. One, if the fund is not allowed to be used, how much of a rate increase will we expect? And if it is used, how much of a rate increase will we expect at the end of the second year?
Thank you for your question. We are focused on using that fund in the most productive way for our customers, and how that turns out in the regulatory process remains to be seen. I'm confident, as I said, that one way or the other, customers are going to achieve stable, affordable rates. I'm confident that that customers are going to achieve rates that are lower than they are today, and I'm confident that will be based on our track record over the last 4 years, and I look forward to going through the Public Service Board process that's just getting underway now to see and understand how our regulators expect that to happen, and we'll see. Our commitment is to deliver a rate decrease. Our commitment is to deliver affordable and competitive rates every year.
There is an issue right now in Hinesburg in construction of the pipeline, and we keep talking about it being in Addison County, but it is an expansion as well in Chittenden County. And there is a park in Hinesburg called Geprags Park, and one of the questions has been, is Vermont Gas basically building through very sensitive wetland area? And it sounds like the way the plan had been constructed, yes, it is. And so there may need to be a change in where the pipeline is constructed. And people who drive through this area will know and be able to see that, in fact, the construction is continuing on either side of this but is stopped in this park right now. And questions remain about whether or not Vermont Gas should have known that this was sensitive wetland area, whether or not the Public Service Department should have done more due diligence. It has admitted it didn't do a walkthrough and should have. What's going to change there that will, you think, allow you to keep constructing through this park?
Jane, let's just review the facts. The pipeline route was created in 2012. It was reviewed by our environmental partners. It was reviewed by the Agency of Natural Resources. It was picked for a reason. It was picked as the least intrusive way to get through the park. And remember that this construction is temporary, that when we're done with construction, we'll leave wetlands and other environmentally sensitive areas as we found them, in many cases even better than we found them. And we chose that route to be as good environmental stewards as we could be. The necessity of remarking a wetland. It was always there. It was always marked. It's really about what the boundary is, and we've gone through that exercise. It's not uncommon in a project like this, and there's a process for working that out, and we expect to do that in the coming weeks.
Meaning you will move where the pipeline is actually laid.
Well, we won't necessarily move where the pipeline is because the wetland has. It doesn't make a difference to the routing of the pipeline. We're focused on getting the pipeline constructed, getting it constructed in the most environmentally appropriate way, getting that temporary construction done and putting it all back the way it was before, which is our commitment, which is the requirement, and which we will achieve.
So you don't plan to move the route?
At this point, we're looking at that route.
Just very briefly before I let you leave, I want to double back to what we were talking about earlier. Is the pipeline going to be finished in 2016 and be in service and of use for the next fiscal year?
It will be when we can resolve Geprags Park and have that piece of the puzzle available for us to connect the pipeline from the north and the south.
And you think that will happen?
Well, I'm hopeful that it will happen. We've still got work to do, and we're working very hard every day. You know, this is a very complicated project. There will be challenges ahead. We're on them, and we're managing them. We're making great progress in construction, and the challenge for us is to connect all the dots. And Geprags Park is one of those connections that we must make to succeed.
That's Don Rendell. He's CEO and President of Vermont Gas Systems. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
And you can find all of our coverage of the pipeline we've been discussing at vpr.net. Search for Vermont Gas Systems. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.